that are going to affect that 15 to 20%. So I think it, as we've had these great successes in terms of being able to provide treatment and prevention, we need to begin thinking about how do we reach out to the other 15 to 20%. And it's tough, because what we know is that there's an ongoing erosion of the availability of health resources across our region, whether it's the ability not to get to care, or once you're at care settings to have stigma or other things happen that interfere with you being able to access drug or to be able to get prevention deeds. We know that there's a chronic problem that's not being addressed evenly across the region in terms of people who are living with or living with others who have substance use or mental health disorders. These are disorganizing factors. They influence people's behaviors in a way that interfere with them being able to take a medication regularly or to engage a behavior risk program in a consistent way. And we also know that we have this increasing problem with poverty. It's one of the most horrible things that's going on right now in our region. As someone who loves LA, it's really tough to be at 6th and Spring at 8 o'clock in the morning. It's really tough to be walking around different parts of town where you see in this just obscene discrepancy between people who have so much resource and people who have nothing. So what happens, why we have to like think this way is because when you bring these three elements together, you have the opportunity for HIV outbreaks, and once outbreaks start, to continue the progression of HIV. So this is why we're here today, is to begin to think about, and I'm going to challenge this room, that for the next decade, that we should be thinking about making available the tools that we need to give to people who can do just fine and do an easy touch on them. Write the check. They're fine. And then to double down on this group that needs more. If we don't, we will virtually assure viremia in the population that will interfere with us being able to get to zero. And that's exactly what Boden Nosek has been able to show. Boden is right over here. He is a modeler. He's from the University of British Columbia. And he's been working with us. I've been working with him. But he works with public health data to begin to think about what happens if we continue to do the same amount of work on the HIV epidemic. And in LA County, we know it's very unique here, that this isn't San Francisco. This isn't New York. It's not Seattle. This is Los Angeles County, which is a region. It's not, I mean, it's a place that's broad. So in terms of thinking about implementing programs, we have to think beyond the borders of our county or the mountains that can, you know, keep us from going into Palmdale-Lancaster, which is another discussion for a different day. But because there's a public health crisis happening in Lancaster and Palmdale. So what Boden did was he took the data from 2012 to 2015 and just asked the question, what would happen if we continue to invest the same amount of resources, not looking at so much about what we're doing, but just the amount of resource in the next 25 years of the epidemic. And what you can see here is that nothing happens. We continue to have the same thing happening. All right. So for a simple guy like me, what that means is we have to change our thinking. All right. So we need to do something different. I don't know that we need more money, but we definitely need to do different things with our money. And that's kind of why I want us to think about the structure of the day in being able to think about, let's leave aside the issue of people who are doing well, and let's start focusing in on the people who we need to lift up and get these problems under control. So we're going to start with talking with our federal state representatives, our county leaders, our community stakeholders, about suggestions and opportunities for a regional response. And within that regional response, I'm going to hold us to being able to address the issues of people who have substance use, mental health disorders, and access to structural determinants to health. Because it's not just a simple put a Band-Aid on it. I mean, we learned this from Africa. We saw Ambassador Birx go in and do a major response. We saw huge responses in the HIV infection rate, and then it hit the plateau. And you know why? Because my people, those who have problems with mental health, substance use disorders, and access to structural determinants, are there too. And they're not actually investing in those people in the way that they need to. So they're sort of like finding, it's proving this case that if you get care to the people who need, who can do with care, you'll be just fine. But, you know, once you're there, you got to do something different. So that's the purpose of the day. So we're going to hear about the End the HIV Epidemic plans from county leaders and discuss gaps and opportunities. There's going to be time for networking with counties at noon. And I really do want people to network because we're going to continue today. We're going to have an outcome from the day that is going to start the thinking of a regional response. All right? So she's the one who will be helping to make sure that we continue this energy after today so that we actually can begin to think about ways to move this forward. And then we're going to have the afternoon to talk about successes. One of the things we found was that people are already working across jurisdictions. We want to highlight that, see what's happening, think about different ways, new resources, things that can happen, about looking not only at HIV but STD transmission as well, and thinking about these pillars. So the objectives for today are to gather ideas. We're going to listen a lot. I'm going to listen. You guys talk. We have a wedding. We're all together. We will dance. And I'm going to listen. So, we're going to build consensus. We're going to identify resources. We're going to talk about capacity building and infrastructure needs. And we're going to identify policy and research questions that are going to support our counties in implementing best practices and strategies to reach the End the HIV Epidemic goals. So, on your desk, on your tables, there are pens and post-it notes. And as you're going through the day, kind of think about things that are happening and write them down, whether they're questions, whether they're thoughts about how we can do interjurisdictional work. You can think about resources and infrastructure needed to implement them, new research ideas and policy changes that are needed. And over on the right side over here, your right, my left, you've got pillars on these that you can stick your post-it notes. We're going to collect those through the day. We're going to be bringing them in real time into our discussion in the afternoon. So please, as you're thinking and ideas come to you, please write them down. When is that good? Okay. So what are we going to get from today? So Mario Perez challenged me when we first started talking about this meeting and said, you can't have a meeting like this and not have something that comes out of it. So we've done a lot of thinking about that. So we're not just going to write a report. We're going to actually start a process. This is going to be the beginning of something that will continue. We will have a summary report. It will be available to you. We're going to follow up with the counties to support development of ideas, to facilitate connections, and to identify resources. And we're going to that's going to help to sustain the regional response. I've already heard a lot of enthusiasm about this idea from people from different levels of government. So we're going to build on this. I appreciate the support that's already in the room to think about this is a no-duh idea. We need to do this. And then CHIPS will actually help to keep things going, either by writing grants or just like spending our nights and weekends. Yeah. So ground rules for today. You know, the bathrooms are over there. There's food that'll be over there. But the idea here is to provide a safe space. One of the things I've learned over the years is that we always assume positive intention. So if somebody says something that doesn't sound right to you, you have the right to challenge. But please remember that everybody in the room is moving from a place of positive intention. And when we're dealing with complex ideas or emotional ideas or different things that are hard to do, it's always good to just remember that people have positive intent. And you can say, I don't think you meant to say that, but here's what I heard. And then give the person a chance to correct. So I do want to make sure that we do have a safe space and that everybody's valued. And then listen. We're going to focus on issues and try to offer solutions. We're going to strive for consensus and compassion. And we're going to give you can read. So let's start with our first panel. So I'd like to invite the first panelists up. Okay. So 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 one of my jobs right now is to do timekeeping. It's amazing. There's so much enthusiasm and so much interest. People are going to want to talk long. So we have a hard 8-minute rule. So I think somewhere, who's doing timekeeping from the audience? Oh, good, James. All right, so can you come sit over here?
Thank you.
So you'll get some where you are in terms of your remarks. We have slides, we have talks, and we have some people on the phone. We're going to start with this morning hearing from Mr. Harold Phillips. He's a senior HIV advisor and chief operating officer at the Office of Infectious Disease and HIV AIDS Policy at HHS. Harold.
Thank you, and good morning, everyone. It's good to see so many familiar faces here. So I sometimes forget. I have so many folks that I've known and have worked with on the West Coast. So it's a pleasure to be here, and thank you for inviting me. My name is Harold Phillips, Chief Operating Officer for the Ending the HIV Epidemic in the Office of the Assistant Secretary in HHS. Just a little bit about the initiative, because I think we all have dived in head first for this adventure, and that you all are probably very much aware of many aspects of the initiative. So I'm just going to give a little bit of context for the why and the when and the what if, which I think we're off to a great start when thinking about that this morning. And this slide gives us some demographics nationally around the epidemic. I think it helps to also point us to those that we need to be reaching, and we need to be thinking about how do we target our resources effectively to reach these populations to have the greatest impact if we are truly committed to ending the HIV epidemic. The initiative itself and the goals very much, and I'm glad there was a brief mention of Ambassador Birx, because one of the things that this initiative does is has a very geographic focus. And those of us who were involved in PEPFAR in the infamous pivot remember what it was like to have to think about targeting resources geographically toward those areas in those countries that were most in need. It worked successfully in Africa, and when people ask me, are we serious about doing this in the United States, and can this happen, I point to countries like Swaziland. I point to other countries in that we're doing this work in PEPFAR, where we've done incredible work to both eliminate and reduce mother-to-child transmission, which we have done in this country, which is a proven success. And so when we apply the science, when we apply the resources, we can have success, and we have had success in HIV. So I ask, if we can do it in other countries that have even less of an infrastructure than ours, then why can't we do it here? We're taking those same principles, those same contexts, and applying them in a U.S. SAD-based setting. We're also doing this by bringing, again, similar to PEPFAR, the best of the U.S. departments and our governments. It is a cross-government initiative as well, where CDC, HRSA, NIH, IHS, SAMHSA, and HRSA are all working together and coordinated through the Office of the Assistant Secretary. I mentioned to somebody, we are in such close collaboration that we almost always run into each other in airports these days as we're going to meetings. That's in addition to the numerous conference calls and webinars that we are on throughout our days, and the reports and responding to ask, because there is great interest in this initiative from OMB to Congress to the White House itself. There have been over 300 listening engagements across the country since the president announced this initiative on February 4th. And believe you me, I tell you, we feel it as federal officials involved in this with a certain sense of urgency, an urgency to apply the epidemiology to ensure that there's antiretroviral therapies that are targeted to those who most need it. As we scale up PrEP across the country and realize what PrEP gives us in the ability to prevent HIV, and that yet there are still many communities that are not aware, and then there are, while awareness has increased over time, and I'm sure someone will speak about that today as well, sort of how do you get individuals to really commit and understand that PrEP can be part of their comprehensive prevention package and approach? And also, how do we train our healthcare workforce to be able to talk about that in a meaningful way with clients and understand the fact that you are putting yourself at risk right now, and we're going to have this conversation, and PrEP is good for you now, but your situation may change in a year, 2 years, maybe even 6 months. And how can I let that be okay? Should I let that be okay with a patient? So being more patient-centered around PrEP, as we have talked about being patient-centered when it comes to HIV treatment, is a new area for us to explore, but something I think we must explore if we're going to be successful when it comes to scaling up PrEP. And then working with our colleagues both in NIH, HRSA, and CDC to ensure that we're using the best that the science tells us when it comes to implementing effective models of care and prevention that can truly reach populations that need our services. We've been doing this for 30 years. The science has evolved as well over those 30 years, and it's time that we go back, look at what works, do what works, and stop doing what doesn't work. The overall goal and initial, I mean, I'm sure several of you have seen this slide about the pillars. Diagnose all people with HIV as early as possible. Treat people with HIV rapidly and effectively to reach sustained viral suppression. Preventing new transmissions, both through scaling up PrEP, but also syringe services programs, and responding quickly to prevent potential HIV outbreaks with needed prevention and treatment based on our ability to monitor those outbreaks as well. The ambitious goals, the 75% reduction within 5 years and a 90% reduction over the 10-year period of the initiative. I've told people at 10 years I'll be 63. It'll be good to get out of the business at that time. So please help me. Please. Also, the importance of the diagnose pillar. 8 in 10 new infections come from people who are not in HIV care. It's really important that we look at how to improve a diagnosis, how to improve diagnosis and make different modes of HIV testing available, and also HIV testing available in a variety of settings, and really thinking about that as part of our planning process and the importance of that pillar, the treat pillar. The science, and one of the great sort of reveals, you equals you, as long as you are you, I like to say. You know, as long as you maintain that viral suppression status, you have no risk of transmitting HIV. That news should be shouted from the top of every mountain that we have, including your beautiful mountains here in Los Angeles. And making sure that people understand that, community understands it, that our healthcare workers understand it, that they are giving that message is a motivating message to stay in treatment, to take care of yourself. The news that you can live a long, healthy life and achieve all of your life goals if you stay in treatment, if you remain undetectable. What better great motivation could that be? You could be able to go to school. You can love. You can get married. You can get that beautiful car that you want that you can't really afford. I mean, it's all there if you stay in treatment and remain undetectable. Prevent, you know, the ability, like I've said, you know, use of PrEP has increased, PrEP awareness has gone up. How do we maintain individuals in PrEP, and what is success with PrEP? One thing that we've talked about recently is the fact that individuals that we are trying to reach with PrEP services at this point in time are folks who really don't interact with the healthcare system. And so we need to think about PrEP more holistically and think about PrEP as a way to begin to engage individuals in healthcare, help them understand it, help it navigate it, help improve health literacy within our communities. And the advantage of PrEP gives us the ability to do all of that and so much more if we approach it more holistically. And so really thinking about how do you get individuals to commit? We've increased awareness, but individuals actually picking up that prescription and then taking PrEP, we still have a lot of work to do within that space to get to understand those motivations and how we can move individuals toward it. The HHS PrEP program, which rolled out on December 3rd, also has very ambitious goals. It is a program that is designed for those who lack health insurance coverage and have an HIV negative test. The program is up and running. And I will probably say more about that at some point later today as well. The prevent pillar, we know, speaking of the science, about what SERN services programs offer and their effectiveness. We know what they do and what they don't do, and making sure that as we look at these programs, we consider them as an option where needed. The respond pillar, HIV action, using our data for our action, and again, targeting resources in the right way. So how will we measure our success? We are looking at a number of the leading indicators for the initiative. New diagnosis, linked to medical care within 30 days after HIV diagnosis, viral suppression, we're looking for that to increase, and the percentage prescribed PrEP with indications for PrEP. There'll be an outward-facing data dashboard for the initiative that may launch by March if we're lucky. That dashboard will show both the national indicators and the jurisdictional indicators and targets, as well as our progress. It's a step toward, I think, transparency and helping us all be able to monitor our progress along the way of the 10-year initiative itself. The epidemic budget, $140 million. 2021 data, I know you asked about future funding and the budget, but I really would like to keep my job. So the budget, the president's budget ask will be released as part of the State of the Union address. Don't want to get out in front of the president. That's a good way to keep your job as a federal official. I am unable at this point in time to discuss the president's budget proposal for the Ending the Epidemic initiative. Let's just say it's in there. And there still seems to be a commitment to the 10 years of this initiative, so we're going to press forward in that way. In thinking about the regional approach, just a couple of things here to think about. Definitely all in favor of it. And given how people live, work, and receive services, or the different dynamics that are in play within sort of California right now, where folks are leaving sort of what we have considered the central urban district and moving out because of a lack of affordable housing and other issues that are impacting sort of our urban areas, and sort of gentrification happening in some places as well, and people are moving further out. We do need to think about that. What does that mean for our service delivery system and a lack of infrastructure in places where it doesn't exist? So in thinking about a regional approach, shared goals, missions, and expected outcomes, I think EHE on a federal level gives us that on some level and platform, but we really need to think about coming together as a regional and how we need to think locally about our shared missions and goals. Also, agreed upon process for decision making, clear roles and responsibilities, accountability, and last, method for ensuring resources get to the areas of most need. Some of you have had intergovernmental agreements that have been able to move money through counties. I know under Ryan White that was true. You may want to think about how you do that under EHE as well. So I will stop there. Thank you. Before I'm played off. It took me a while to realize where I was. I could get played off at the office.
You could get, it is that sort of thing here, yes, exactly. Thank you, Harold. That was wonderful. Next up is Dr. Chris Gordon. He's the branch chief at the Division of AIDS Research at the National Institute on Mental Health. And he'll be speaking with us. He's been a great person to invest in Los Angeles, and he's going to give us some remarks from his desk.
Thanks, Steve. I promise you that I'll be super brief because I'm super excited to be done talking and to start listening, as Steve said. Steve, thanks for the welcome. It's really heartfelt. And, you know, I think that words are important, so there's a few words that I just wanted to share with you. I'll also tell you some things that, you know, how NIH, how we can be useful in this fight, but I just want to start by saying thank you for being here. Thank you for the work that you do. We get to this point in our lives where people don't thank us much anymore, and that's okay. And in fact, they might say, well, you're ending the epidemic. What the hell have you been doing these past 30 years? And I said, Dad, we're really trying. So, and I also just wanted to show you, it's a very cool thing about this group and this meeting. Can you show them the sign, the stop sign? It says stop, and then it says please. It's really, so I feel very safe here, so thanks for creating that space. So, there are a couple terms that I think are important that Steve alluded to and that I think are driving why we're here together today, and that's that we've made a concerted effort at the federal level to cooperate so much more, and it's been energizing, and relationships are built on trust, and I think because we've been working together now for 20 years, we have developed a trust, and maybe some of you have or have not worked together. Maybe you haven't worked with researchers, but I promise you that we fund researchers that give a shit, and we fund researchers that do not get in the way, and we fund researchers that really are as passionate, and there's passionate people at the federal level that are really trying to do what we can to listen to you because that's our job. And so I really want to hear the ideas about research that we can fund, because here's what I can offer. I'm at NIMH, at the National Institute of Mental Health. We've been funding research for a long time that's been trying to be helpful in this fight to try and reach some of the folks that Steve alluded to. Maybe that's a 15 to 20%, but that's a revolving door, so it's not the same 15 to 20% all the time. Life changes, and so we're making a concerted effort not to call them hard to reach anymore, but hardly reached. That's not their fault. It's our fault, but I try not to blame myself too much that we're not doing the right things. It's just maybe there are some things that we can do differently. And so one of the things that we can do at NIH is put out calls for applications that answer the questions that you need answered. And we will do the best that we can to work as quickly as we can to move that glacier to answer those questions. But it requires perhaps some new collaborations and partnerships and allowing people into our worlds and knowing what each other does. So how is it that research can help in this process? And there are people at CHIPS and other centers around the country. We funded 65 supplements now to centers between NIMH and NIAID, and those are planting seeds to do these kinds of planning meetings to figure out in the next 6 months to a year, are there research applications that can be jointly submitted that can help you both enhance your services immediately, but also produce generalizable knowledge that you're the first regional response effort that I'm aware of that's happening, that's funded in this process. You could be a model for how to do this in other places so that there can be cross-county learnings. And the things that you learn here about the efforts that you make in surveillance and intervention can be a model for what can be done around the country. And so it really is an awesome opportunity. And I'm just happy to be a part of it. And more so than ever, what I'm hearing amongst my colleagues at HRSA and SAMHSA and NIH and IHS is that this process needs to be ground up and not top down. And so I think I'll just stop there and save time to do more listening. And thanks again for being here. And please, I think I get it, and we think we get it. But if I don't get it, tell me and tell me what I need to do more of. So thanks.
Thanks, Chris. Our next speaker is Captain Paul Weidel. He's from, he is the Officer of the Director, Division of HIV/AIDS Prevention at the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. Paul.
Thank you all. I'm going to give you some remarks on. Did I just kill that? No, here we go. So I'm going to give you some remarks from a CDC perspective. They're not meant to be that I suggest that they're just our jurisdiction, because obviously there's a lot of other players in this world. But the first thing I'd like to talk about is the planning that's happened so far. So I think you all know HHS gave CDC money to fund 32 jurisdictions that support the 57 EHE Phase 1 jurisdictions to conduct a rapid planning process. Those who aren't aware, most people in the room probably are aware, but CDC has direct funding relationships with the state of California, with Los Angeles County, with San Francisco. So there are three separate awards that went for planning for those. And looking at the map here, you can see that there are some jurisdictions where a reasonable approach to implementation may also make sense. I've not read all the plans, so I can't speak to all of them. But for instance, in Georgia, where we're located, the four EHE counties are really metropolitan Atlanta. Those four counties plus one more are really metropolitan Atlanta. So they're already working very closely together on their plan. And then you look in Florida, the three southern counties are the three relatively big counties that are next to each other. And there's three central counties as well in Florida. And then in Maryland and D.C., the two counties in Maryland border the District of Columbia. And so I'm not sure how much the plans will come in that way. But there are some opportunities for regional approaches to EHE. So I'm going to present some concepts under each of the pillars that might be addressed regionally. And again, these might be some things you're already thinking of, you're already doing, so I don't be pretending to be the only one with ideas. And again, it's a CDC-centric thought of it, but not to imply that it's our jurisdiction alone. So the first around diagnose, I think you know that about 86% of persons with HIV infection had received a diagnosis and to accomplish the goals of EHE, we need to increase HIV testing to increase knowledge of status. So, of course, this can be addressed through routine testing in healthcare settings, rescreening persons at high risk for HIV, and then innovative strategies in non-healthcare settings. I think one example of an innovative strategy in a non-healthcare setting that can be applied regionally is to establish HIV self-testing programs regionally. CDC just published the eStamp study in JAMA in 2019 that demonstrated that the distribution of self-test kits to MSM through social media, through internet-based mailing of self-tests to people, was successful at engaging persons at risk for HIV infection into HIV self-testing, thus increasing awareness of HIV infection. There are some examples of distribution of HIV self-test kits. In Philadelphia, they have via an internet site. There's one in Philadelphia and one that's just recently started in Baltimore as well. But other models could be through the internet or through distribution of coupons from CBOs or clinics for HIV self-test kits where they can be redeemed at pharmacies. So you give them a coupon. You don't have to necessarily stock kits everywhere. Just give them a coupon. They can go redeem it. And it can also use a social network strategy to give multiple coupons to an individual to give out to their friends or persons they think might be at risk for HIV. In terms of treat, one concept might be to establish a health department hotline to triage new diagnoses and to be able to report to public health and to help with linking people to care and re-engaging people in care. So a regional approach might be whereby one hotline serves multiple jurisdictions by staffing one call center that manages the information that comes in. Another, of course, is data to care, and California is already doing this. A lot of the data to care can be coordinated at the state level, and then the line lists are shared with the counties. But then a regional approach would be through data sharing agreements across counties to be able to share information and to look for out-of-care patients across counties. Another would be data to care using medical claims or pharmacy claims data to identify people who've stopped filling prescriptions for antiretroviral therapy at a claims level. So this could be done with Medi-Cal data or with private insurer data or through a claims adjudicator with the interventions then operationalized through the pharmacy or through the clinic or through the health department. So the claims data will likely cover more than one jurisdiction. So one insurer might be across all of Southern California. For prevent, for a regional idea for PrEP, obviously TelePrEP is a promising technique to engage people in PrEP who may not want to visit a traditional brick-and-mortar clinic or live a distance from the nearest PrEP clinic. I understand that California started to use a vendor for TelePrEP, though there may be other vendors as well. So a regional approach would be to be marketing one or few vendors that the different counties can kind of buy into to get people to use to access TelePrEP through the same process. For syringe service programs, you already have a statewide approach for registering and approving syringe service programs, and that's actually very, so it's already regionalized, and it's already a huge step forward compared to sites that don't have that. And one of the great benefits of that is the ability to use to also receive materials from the California Syringe Exchange Supply Clearinghouse. So you already have this place, this in place. I understand not all counties have SSPs or have approved SSPs. What this does is once they get over, if they address that, this approach enables the counties that have not yet started the SSPs to have a process to rely on to start, so they don't have to figure it out themselves from scratch. And another is that non-prescription syringe sales, California law and regulations allow pharmacies to sell syringes without a prescription. They actually provide, so this activity can be regionalized since the program provides the pharmacist with guidance on what needs to be done regarding distribution and disposal of syringes. So it gives the pharmacist kind of direction of if somebody walks in for syringes, it's, you know, they're not just getting hit cold. They actually have a process that they can follow. And this, obviously, you could also add other things to this with the coupons, with self-testing, vaccination, naloxone distribution. And a regional approach would be to work with the pharmacies in the area to embrace them as part of the HE, to have them all get that to be part of the program so that they're not all out there trying to figure out what it is they're doing on an individual, you know, pharmacy-to-pharmacy basis. And then last, with Respond, obviously with cluster detection, time-space cluster of an increase in diagnoses among a particular group of people over a relatively short period of time may be noticed in one region. But a molecular cluster identified via secure HIV trace may be noted at the state level and may involve people from multiple jurisdictions. So obviously, in those situations, jurisdictions can share data and have established communication channels. For instance, having regularly scheduled calls across jurisdictions to discuss ongoing cluster investigations. And then the response can also be regionalized, since it's possible that people in a cluster, of course, are in different counties, or they may move from one county to another. So this might require establishing data sharing agreements and then creating MOUs for how to use staff or surge capacity across the jurisdictions. For instance, if you need to share DIS or share testing staff across jurisdictions. Now, obviously, a transmission cluster is evidence that the prevention services have not adequately reached the network. So when communities are planning for how to use data to find and address these gaps, it's obviously very important to involve members of the local communities themselves in the planning and in the implementation and the evaluation of the cluster response. The phrase I use there is make the community part of the solution. Don't make them feel like they're just part of the problem. And obviously, there's a lot of other things that can be done leveraging community resources and expertise around cluster response that need to be thought about. So with that, I will stop and turn it over to the next speaker.